We are so privileged and so excited now to have Jessica Barber coming and teaching on mission to the poor. Please welcome her.
Test. I feel like I'm tapping into the ring of heavy hitters. I should stretch first. Going after Amos. Yeah, right. Wee. It's so good to be here. Often when I come to Canon, I'm hit with love. Like, I love you guys. Oh my gosh. I can't contain it. But this time it felt a little different when I came in throughout the week during Via Days. I felt an expectation and excitement that we get to go together. The people I love, we're going now. And so let's enter mission. This is super exciting. So a little bit about me, kind of a little picture. I was a little girl who so desperately wanted to please my Father in heaven through a number of different vocations, from 5 years old being, I'll be a dancer, 10 years old, I'll be a singer. I was a photographer, all of these things. I feel like I could relate to Via's season, where over the last little while we've been trying to find our identity. And we've found our calling as sons and daughters of the King, and that's amazing. And just like we have found throughout those things, I found that God met with me and met through me with other people. There was blessing and encouragement, but each vocation always seems to have an end. Each time that it would end, I would try to rediscover who I was. And that seemed okay. We're in a journey, right? We're in a journey with the Lord. But something about that was jarring to me every time, having to rediscover who I am. Many people struggle with calling. We try to find what it is that the Lord wants us to do. We encourage our children to find out what they're called to and therefore what they're meant to do. We realize vocations start, though, and they end. And my route through those left me wondering, is there more? Is there something that feels a little more fulfilling to my connection with the Lord? When our third son, Ambrose, was born, Stephen had the job of convincing me of his name. I wasn't so sold on Ambrose. And he did it with this, a quote from St. Ambrose. When giving to the poor, you are not giving him what is yours. Rather, you are paying him back what is his. Indeed, what is common to all and has been given to all to make use of, you have usurped for yourselves alone. The earth belongs to all, not only to the rich, but you are paying back, therefore, your debt. You are not giving gratuitously, which you do not owe. And it punched me right in the gut, partly because I could relate. I knew a little of what it's like to go without, and it feels unjust. It doesn't always feel like my sin. It feels wrong. And all of what St. Ambrose had said. Am I still on? Sorry. And it awoke a desire in me. I'd heard somewhere that early Christians had said, if a child starves to death while a Christian has extra food, that person is guilty of murder. How does that gut you? Not because I live this way do I feel that, but because I want to live this way. I believe it, and I so badly want to live. And I believe that's where we're at. We all want to live a little bit more. Something I love that I've read often from Princess Diana, she said, you can't comfort the afflicted without afflicting the comfortable. I'm sure that we're all here coming to a bit of an extra thing because we are hungry for more. We believe and we want to live. The more that I've been looking for, I kind of hear in these questions, what enables someone to give their whole life for another man, to lay down their life for a man? What enables missionaries to find joy when they lay down their life? What makes Mother Teresa desire to draw near to dying people and make them her one and only focus? Some people say it's calling, and that in that God enables one to do the things that they do in extreme circumstances. But what if I told you they actually lead a simple but most fulfilling life, being free to do what we are all called to do? I think that would probably ring true to you. I'm sure you feel that. By being fishers of men, by loving God and loving people the way that Christ did, and we do hope to do. What they have done is make a choice to be all in, to place that calling above everything else. It's a universal calling. And Timothy Keller says that many heartfelt Christians do not demonstrate concern for the poor at all. And I think that rings true to what I've heard too many times. That's not my calling. I don't feel God bringing me there. It seems to me, though, that Peter, James, and John dropped their nets. They dropped the tools of their trade, the things that they were trained to use, the things they were gifted in, to join Christ in fishing for men. Something they had never done before, probably needed training to do, and were probably scared out of their pants. So, in that, I realized that as much as we take on the call of being fishers of men, which is pointed out to be all of our call through Acts 13:47 and Romans 10:13-14, I still don't necessarily know what that looks like in my life. I don't have nets. It's easy to put that off if you can't directly tie it to your story. So what does that look like to follow Christ? Paul said in Ephesians 5:1-2, "Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for you," gave himself up for us as an offering, "and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." So what Christ has done for you, now go and do that for others. If we truly want to imitate God, Christ is our perfect example. He's sought out, focused on the outcasts of society, and we can't deny that that was his primary focus, and he sought them out. The poor, the sick, the rejected, the lost, marginalized, with compassion. He suffered and died for them. Not only did he see them, but he drew near to them. He wept and mourned with those who mourned. He drew children into his lap. He touched the leper. He saw their pain and he felt it. He thought deeply about them, just as he thinks deeply about you. He saw that there was cruelty in their culture, and he countered that with compassion, fighting for them with his own actions. Christ was God coming near, drawing near to us in solidarity with us in our suffering. Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He saves those who are crushed in spirit," literally. So how close does he get? He did spit in a man's eye before he asked his name. There's a clue. So how comfortable are you with imitating Jesus? Like Christ, we are to take what we have and boldly give it away. Galatians 5:13-14 says, "For you were called to freedom, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word: you shall love your neighbor as yourself." So in the soup kitchen, which we've got about 13 people that all gather for one team, we've come to know Bill Ginther, who runs the soup kitchen just as of the last year, and he's a man worth getting to know, a man worth his weight in wisdom, and we could debate whether that or not that's heavy later. He reminds each of our teams before we start of our purpose, and he does that by saying this: "We are here to restore dignity to the patrons that come. Most are not here because they want to be here, and he knows most of their stories, so he can say that. The unjust and cruel circumstances of their lives have led them here, so look them in the eye and mean it. They matter." And tell them that with a smile. So with him as my example, I entered into the story of a woman's life. Her name was Sam. And I met her at, you would probably guess it, it's Johnny Bean. She was a tall, beautiful Native woman with a round face and a few noticeable scars. When she walked in, she said hi to Ambrose right away, my son. And she excused herself to me and asked, do you have a phone that I could use? So then after dialing a number, as I asked her to sit with us, she began a conversation with her caseworker. She worked out some details and got off the phone and then looked at Ambrose and said, you're real cute. Are you afraid of me? In a really sweet way. And if you know Ambrose, you would be afraid of his reaction. It was okay. He shrugged his shoulders, which is good. That's as good as it gets. And then she said, I'd like to show you something. Can I have your phone again? And she pulled out my phone and she typed in Dolly Parton's version of What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And she played it there on the speaker, louder than John's hipster music in the background. And my face was like this. That is amazing. Dolly Parton. She told me that was her favorite song and that she also needed a key from her caseworker to get into her house because she needed to get home to clean up the blood that was sprayed all over her house from the murder that had happened 2 days prior from her boyfriend. Her boyfriend had committed this murder. In my peripheral, I'm looking at Ambrose, but he's still blip-blipping away on my phone, so I think we were okay. He was distracted, I suppose. Then she pulled up an article from the local news, and it was true. She began to tell me, though, and switching subjects, why we couldn't be friends, because I'm not one of her people, and only her people understand her people. Okay. But inside, I just felt a burning, which is a common thing when I feel the Lord speaking, and I felt, she wants to be my friend, I think. She clearly wants to be Jesus's friend. She also began to show me a book that she was reading, but got distracted by a call that came in on my phone for her. She answered it and then started running outside. And as she realized what she was doing, she scolded the person on the other line. She was like, well, I can't just go outside. I have this nice lady's phone. So she ended the call, handed it back to me, but it was an abrupt situation. She ran out the door before we could actually talk. So nuts. That's okay. Ambrose was back on my phone, though, and he's sitting there and he mutters, I liked that song. Again, pretty good reaction for Ambrose. So it was more than a year later, and we were serving in the soup kitchen. I was handing out trays in line, and in just two steps, Sam passed by right in front of me. And so, like a year of pent-up excitement would sound, I shouted to her. I was like, hi, Sam. I was the lady that had the phone, and my son was there, and he liked the song that you played. And by that time, she was at the end of the line, and she looked back at me, and she was like, I remember you. How do you remember my name? You liked the song? And it was just as exuberant, which is kind of fun. at that point, I'm sure I felt like that must have meant something to her. I hope it did, and she lit right up. So even though I'm not one of her people, I'm pretty sure I'm one of her new friends. She just doesn't know it yet. And I have a set date in my heart with her for the next soup kitchen. But there was a gift in this for me, obviously, to be had. There was new sight, a new depth of love that seems to happen every time I encounter someone like her. You receive this after you open up your heart to suffering people. I'm starting to see that there is a more real reality than we know, and that only God can open that up to you. When I come to the Lord about her and I ask, this is what I see, and this is what I think my Father sees. Who faces that kind of brutality, murder, that drenches your home with what a friend I have in Jesus in mind? And that's what I see. She's right. She probably has a lot of complications in her life. And she is right and has a truth. I find that often we come to people to bring Jesus to them. But the sight that he has is their life from its beginning, he formed them in his heart and has been there. And we kind of need to wonder, are we missing that he's already there? I so badly want to talk to her again and marvel at the goodness that God has already done in her. I have to see that God is at work around me, not me bringing God's work into the world. I am joining him, as Amos mentioned. When I think of her, my heart overwhelmingly wells with joy, and this is starting to be a new thing. But it's the gift that I receive because love is never one-sided with God. He is always working all of our lives together for our good. But do you want this? Do you want this reality? Do you want this joy more? More than everything else. In mission, I see my call in all the complicated, divergent streams coming together to join a raging river that is bigger than my own. When I look into this woman's face, Christ in her and Christ in me, it's a simple picture, but it's the big picture. It's the ultimate call. It's all the little things coming to join where God's Spirit is flowing. So don't look at your calling too long. Don't look at your identity for too long, so long that you miss the people that they are meant to serve. God has more for you there. So I don't even believe that in everything that I had been doing, like whether I had been serving through music or through arts or through whatever it was I was doing, I don't believe I was fully receiving the Lord at that time because I was focused on what I was doing rather than what he was doing. If we want more, we should have one focus, joining Christ, loving on mission in the world. This is how you rediscover Christ on a daily basis. You have a renewal of your salvation when you encounter people who are crucified as Christ. And Mother Teresa put it well when she said, in the poor we meet Jesus in his most distressing disguises. Those who have fully given themselves to God and are with the poor experience this grace to see God in places that others just don't. I often consider part of my daily bread comes from the people that I encounter that the Lord has for me that day. If you look around, you can see people who do live like this, like that are exemplary in our congregation, in our worlds. We do have the Apostle Paul as an example, Mother Teresa, but also our own missionaries, Wilson, Amos and Sarah, obviously. Sarah and Rob, Bill, Heather Ollis, Shane and Marcus, Jeff and Trina, and so many more. So if you need to know where to look, please do look there. They've received grace of faith that proved to be more indestructible in the face of suffering than what most Christians know. They receive it by choosing Christ and his mission over this world, emptying themselves of attachments to this world, giving space for heaven. And the Apostle Paul also said in Philippians 3:17, join with others in being imitators of me, brothers, and observe those who thus conduct themselves according to the model that you have in us. He also says this because he too imitates Christ. He mentions that in 1 Corinthians 11:1. So we know that he was wholly dedicated to that, the model of Christ. These people who give themselves to suffering receive an awareness of God that those who haven't suffered really don't, as God draws nearer to them, and God has pointed that out again and again in Scripture, that by receiving that, they receive the ability to face the worst that the enemy has to offer and see that God is not only real, he's who he says that he is, and he's more than enough. He is greater. He is greater than the things that we are attached to. They experience resurrecting joy. They find a greater solidarity with Christ. They know him better because they know crucifixion. They've beaten death and they rose again. Often when people travel on mission and come in contact with the poor, they realize that the joy they have actually isn't, well, easily shaken. They're happy with little. They're thankful for another day. And you're probably familiar with hearing about this. the other thing that strikes me is they actually don't pine for the things that we pine for of this world. They actually don't try to find the newest, the latest, the things they're missing, the contraptions that could do this for them, all of that. They're not. When people come from other countries, they're not really asking you about that, are they? They want to know you, and they want to love you and be loved by you because they know something that we don't. So what's this grace that they have, this miraculously unmerited favor that's an endless flow of God giving himself to us, is because they aren't filled by things of this world. It's what God gives a mother who has no food for her kids for the next day, trust and faith in God's provision. This is the greatest gift we can receive, part of God himself. It brings real life, and we need to ask for it. God will probably tell you to go find it in them, though. We can probably relate when we've asked God to pay a bill, when we're struggling to cover something that's broken and we just don't have the money. And when we ask God to provide, we increase in faith when we see him come through. But if he did not pay my bill to appease my debts or make a precedent of paying for anything in my life, but I received the sight to see that this bill would not overcome me and that God's goodness would sustain me, then I receive that same grace that that woman with no food for her children receives. It's trust and faith in God's provision. So can we see ourselves in the poor? Bertrand Russell once said, to be without some of the things that you want is actually an indispensable part of happiness. But we know it's more than just seeking happiness for us. It's about justice for the poor, an obligation we have as Christians to be a light in the darkness, to be a part of the redemption of a broken world that is cruel and unkind. Remember the city of Sodom? It was destroyed for its sinfulness. I'm sure we probably have read that a few times and know what the sin was, but I'm just going to read it for you. The sin, the reason that they were destroyed was, in Ezekiel 16:49, put this way, "Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her sisters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and the needy." This isn't acceptable. It's not just an invitation. It's a mandate for Christianity. We can't live the way that they did. It's a message about our universal call. It wasn't just St. Ambrose that put things so bluntly that I mentioned in the beginning, but one of the fathers of the church, Basil the Great, wrote in the 4th century, "When someone strips a man of his clothes, we call him a thief. And when one who might clothe the naked does not, should he not be given the same name? The bread in your cupboard belongs to the hungry. The coat in your wardrobe belongs to the naked. The shoes that you let rot belong to the barefoot. The money in your vaults belong to the destitute." It's true that while we want to be like Christ, we can't make ourselves that way. We are not perfect. We are not holy. Our eyes can't help but be drawn the other way. We don't even look, or sometimes if we do, we lose our focus over time. We don't always see what Christ sees, and then when we taste it, we get distracted. Even good things like our calling can become a self-focused distraction. We need to ask the Lord for holiness, and like Amos mentioned, we really need to pray for ourselves as much as we need to pray for them. Ask the Lord, give me grace of freedom from this world that Paul talks about in Philippians 3:7-16. Free my heart from attachments of this world. Free me from my possessions. Let me only use them to serve your ultimate purpose of mission. Fill me only with you. That is enough for me. Is that what you want, though? Is that what you desire? Also, break my heart for what breaks yours. Bind my wandering and distracted heart to thee. Give me solidarity with the poor, and let me see myself in the sinner that they are. Let me see you crucified through their suffering, and let me be moved to action against injustice. We can only do this, though, by drawing close to God and close to them. Be with the poor, search them out, as much as you would search Amazon for your groceries. Be with God daily. It's necessary to sustain our faith and trust in God and our love for the poor. It's necessary to discern where God is moving, to see, as Christ said in John 5:19, to see what God is doing. Very truly, I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees the Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son does also. And in John 8:28, I do nothing on my own initiative, but I speak these things as the Father taught me. So the reason that I brought calling into connection with the poor is because that seems to be where our heart is tied. It's so personal that we seek it as if it's a part of our direct connection to the Lord. It's my calling. It's who I am. It's so personal that we go after it, long for it, and many people spend their whole lives contemplating it. So I'm hoping that you shift your focus away from that and see what is truly personally yours, what's meant to be a gift for you. And that's the poor. The ones that you are called to are yours. They're your brothers, your sisters, your mothers, your grandparents, your sons, your daughters. They are meant to be one with you, Christ in you and Christ in them. They are God's prodigal sons and daughters, and they are they're part of God's heart. If you want to be close to his heart, then be close to them. So let us join Christ in every way. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, I pray that he would say of us, "For I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me."